Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. Hope you all doing well on this Thursday evening. I'm your host, Scott Burks. This is the Clown Hour. I'm the creator of sports blogs called The Clown Times. The Clown Spells K, by the way. You can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you're able to find me on Facebook. Just do a search in the upper left-hand corner. I guess that's where it is. Search window there. Type in The Clown Times. Again, that's Clown Spells K. You'll find me there. Find me cutting up with all things LeBron James, other things, NBA free agency and whatnot, the World Cup too on there as well. So part of me has to stop grooving and stop doing the John Travolta or the hustle or whatever the hell you call those dance. But anyway, we got a very busy show tonight. We're going to be talking about, first of all, you know, all things World Cup. You know, we're in the quarterfinals. A lot of stuff going on there, as well as that crazy-ass period called NBA free agency. It is really blowing up the spot. I mean, I hadn't seen the NBA this interesting in a very long time in the offseason. So we'll be talking about that with my guy, like one of the sports hosts that I sometimes do a sports show like once or twice a month here locally, actually in the suburbs of Cincinnati called Hamilton. Is actually called the Weekend Adjustments and WMOH 1450, the ticket, which comes on every Saturday morning at from 10 to 12. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about Wimbledon 2018, with one of my favorite guests. Y'all know her from the co-host of the YouTube podcast, Real Tennis Fans, the one and only, I get her name right this time, Janina Reed. Miss Reed, it's been
well
a while.
Done.
How are you doing?
I'm well. All how right. are you? I feel like
I'm
I might have my own theme music.
You know what? You just might. I mean, you know, it's, you know, either that or Uptown Girls, you know, by Pet Shop Boys. I thought it was either that one or the Bee Gees, More Than a Woman. I mean, by the way, I just absolutely love. That soundtrack. It's one of my favorite movie soundtracks of all time. Talk about Saturday Night Fever. I'm 40. I'll be 45 in September. Thank you very much. I'm only 5 years older than you, Missy. You make me sound like I'm ancient, even though I feel like it. But I'll say this. My brother and I wore the hell out of that CD. I mean, you know, it's. Bee Gees, man. I mean, Bee Gees is one of they're a great group. People know, acknowledge their greatness, but to me, compared to other groups, they're vastly underrated, in my opinion. So,
fair enough.
Shout out to the Bee Gees, or at least the one Bee Gee that's still alive. So, which is sad, but anyway. And you laughing too? You gonna go to hell for that?
You're like, well, at least to the one.
Right, to the one, exactly. All right, sis. All right, there's a little Wimbledon here. Well, first of all, I mean, you know, it's been going on for the past little over a week, I guess. But
First
thing I want to talk about, and I always have to talk about this young lady, at least young compared to us, Sloane Stephens. What the hell? I mean, she is so too damn talented to be going on the first round of Wimbledon. I mean, you're closer to this than I am, obviously. But what the hell is going on with Sloane? Why can't she be so consistent? Why is that missing from a game for some reason?
She's just not consistent, period. End of story.
Uh-huh.
That's the easy answer. She hasn't been consistent throughout her career. Typically, she shows up for the big stuff, but lately not even so much that. In her last five majors, she has either gone out in the first round or won the whole thing, or at least made it to the final. So it's like round one, win it. Round one, losing the final round one out. Yeah. So, you know, but she made some really poor choices, it seems like, this time around, because she did not play a grass court warm-up. I have no idea why. I don't know if she's nursing an injury. Like, you're not Serena Williams. You don't get to do that, boo. Play a warm-up.
Right.
You know, that's she fucked up. But I'm not surprised.
I mean, I can't believe she didn't play a warm-up test. I mean, most people who work for them, or at least take their craft a little bit seriously, play a warm-up tournament. So I don't understand. I just don't. I mean, I'm with you. I don't get it.
The tour just moved from clay to grass. That's a huge difference. Get in a smaller tournament and play. It really, to me, is that simple, and she didn't do it. So, therefore, you have her going out to, you know, Donna Vekic, number 55 in the world, home wrecker, sleeping with Stan Wawrinka. There's all kinds of stuff going on there.
Wow.
That's the lady. And Donna's been playing well. I'm pretty sure she just won a tournament. So that's, you know, that's what you get. That's what you get for showing up thinking you can do shit you can't do.
I mean, well, one would think, to your point, she's so damn inconsistent. I mean, she's like, how old is she, 25? I mean, she's in the prime of her career.
I really don't even know. I mean, she's young, but, yeah, I'm not really sure how old she is. But she should know better. Her coach should know better, which is why I say I wonder if she's nursing some injury we didn't know about. Because it just doesn't – I can't wrap my mind around the fact that she went straight – into a major without any type of warm-up on that surface other than practice. That just seems silly and naive and flat-out stupid.
Right. That's too bad because, I mean, I'm trying to pull for this sister. I mean, she had a breakthrough at the U.S. Open last year. And, I mean, I'm looking forward to do big things. I'm just sitting and waiting on the edge of my chair, hoping that she takes that next step. Because she has all the talent in the world. I mean, we talked about ad nauseum before, but she has all the talent in the world. And just to have this one major. I mean, I mean, obviously that's one more major than I would ever have. I mean, you know, to be honest. But the thing is she should have with her skill set, she should have at least three or four by now. Just from following her from the distance for the past few years.
She probably should. She probably should be better off than she is, but I don't know. I mean, I've spoken with her coach. I don't think it's a work ethic thing. I don't think she's lazy and doesn't want to put in the work. I don't think that's it at all. She's just, I think it's probably more of a mental issue. She really didn't have two fucks to give in her presser after she lost that match. And then she tweeted some bullshit about I'm not going to be down and I'm going to, you know, I'm moving on. I mean, you lost in round one to Wimbledon, the pinnacle of tennis. You should be sad.
Yeah. She sounds a lot like the White Howard, you know, in the NBA, like one of those people where if he or she loses, then her attitude would be like, well, the sun's going to shine tomorrow. That's what she sounds like. That
yeah, that's pretty much it. But it's not even
that
positive. It's more
bad.
Like, oh, well, I lost. Moving on.
That's too bad. Again, a young lady with her skill set should have a lot more than one major by now. So
she may
I'm
going to say she might want to consider stopping with all the really poor photo shoots that make her look like a wannabe porn star and focus on the tennis. Cause those are bad, bad, bad. Sloan is a beautiful woman. She is gorgeous, but she keeps finding herself in these really awkward photo shoots. These people don't dress her right. They don't photograph her right. She needs to cut that shit out and just go play tennis. Cause it's really, really bad.
Well, I mean, I wish she could do like Serena would do or other tennis stars in the past. Or present, really. Just go 0-30 and just go to the lab and hunker down, you know?
Something. Hey,
I mean, it seems like that's what Madison Keys. I mean, exactly. I mean, I'm looking at, like, her contemporaries such as Madison Keys, one of her best friends. I think she's still in the tournament, and she mm-hmm. seems to be still doing well. I mean, I think she's smarting from, I would say to say, still smarting from losing the U.S. Open Finals to one of her best friends. But you can tell that she's still chopping that wood, so to speak. You know, she's still grinding. She's still busting her ass just to get that one elusive major.
We'll see how she does at the business end of the tournament. Madison Keys can be a bit of a head case.
Oh, really? See, I don't know. I'm thinking
she likes to cry on the changeovers.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, these American girls, they need to get it together.
Well, speaking of American girls, I hadn't heard anything from one of your favorites, Vandeweghe chick, Coco Vandeweghe.
Coco is out.
What's up with her?
She lost already. You know, these are people doing God's work.
Have a lot of twins. No comment. But I mean, there's another one who has all the talent in the world, and yet, I mean, at least Sloane has one major title. I mean, I don't know what's going on with Coco. I mean, it's something about, to your point, I guess, something about these American tennis players, like outside of the Williams sisters, of course, who
she is a Trump supporter. She's a Trump supporter. I'm telling you, this is God's work.
Moving right along. okay. Well, one more segment on the American women. At least the women's sisters are still in it. I think both sisters play tomorrow. Serena being a 25th seed. I mean, I know she's coming back from a pregnancy, but it's odd to see Serena Williams seed is so low, let alone the 25th seed.
Well,
that's making this pretty interesting.
You have to understand that she really isn't seeded at all. That was gratitude from the people of Wimbledon. Her ranking is very low. Her ranking isn't high enough right now to even get her direct entry into the tournament. So Wimbledon always messes. They're the only major that messes with the seedings, although the U.S. Open claims that they're going to do it this year. Every major has the right to adjust their seedings, but Wimbledon is the only tournament that always does. And they do have a formula for it on the men's side where they calculate how they've played on grass for the past year, blah, blah, blah. And so it's not uncommon for the men to not follow their ranking. The women, they just kind of do whatever they want. So really she shouldn't have been ranked. So I think that's probably a fair seating for her and for the other people, because I think we have to realize that it's not so much about who Serena plays. There's a marketing side to all of this, and the tournament does not want to see Serena Williams come up against, you know, Simona Halep in round one and knock out their number one seed. You know, that's bad business. So they tried to put her somewhere in the middle. I think we'll see that again at the U.S. Open. But she's looking good. Venus is looking good. And all these seeds that are dropping like flies, the road to the finals, or at least the semifinal that Serena and Venus could meet up at, it's pretty clear. At this point, it looks like one of them are going to have to be the one that slips up and makes a mistake. If Serena loses, nobody's going to be surprised because she doesn't have that much match play, but she's looking better.
Right.
Every match, even with her compression stockings, she looks great. Did you see that?
I know, that bodysuit of hers. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Speaking of Serena, there's one that this just popped in my head, literally. The whole kerfluffle of her continuous testing for performance enhancing drugs.
Yes.
I read somewhere that she's been tested more, like to the point that some of her contemporaries have only been tested either once or none at all. And
so,
it's obvious to me that she's been targeted, but let me just get your thoughts on it.
I think that you can look at that two ways. I think you can look at it as that she's, well, first, just some context. Serena Williams mm-hmm. has been tested more than any American man or woman who is active or not active. So I
right.
find it odd that she's been tested for drugs more than Sloane Stephens, who just won a major. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just weird. However, I read the article that you're referring to, and I did feel like she's being targeted, but she can't say she's being targeted, because if she says she's being targeted, then she's the whiny little black lady. She's the crybaby.
Mm.
You know, she will
yeah.
turn into, the media will turn that into a circus, and she will be the angry
mm-hmm.
black woman who doesn't want to follow the rules, because the rules clearly state that they can test you multiple times a day if they want to. So the flip side of that is how lax the testing truly is. So instead of us saying, why is Serena being tested so much, the question really should be, why isn't everybody else being tested? Why are you not concerned
right.
that the sport is clean across the board? That's really the bigger – what wasn't said is way bigger than what was said in that article.
Mm, that's a good point. You make a good point, because to me – I mean, you always want to be transparent, right? If you're a sporting organization, you always want to be transparent, make sure everything's, like, on the up and up, so to speak, in terms of, like, you know, quote-unquote, having clean athletes, you know, everything's done by hard work and stuff, like, enhancers, if you will. But from what I've read and from what you just said, I mean, that looks like that's not going to change anytime soon, obviously, so...
No, of course it's not. I mean, Roger Federer is taking the conversation a little bit different. He has said on multiple occasions, there's a tournament in Dubai that he has played at for, I mean, he's been on tour for 20 years, so who knows how many times he's played there.
Sure.
However, he trains there in the off season, so he spends a lot of time in Dubai. Of all the years that he has spent in Dubai, and he has won that tournament, I believe, more than five times, he has been drug tested one time. Now, several years ago when Maria Sharapova had her failed test, he had said at that point
yep.
that he had never been tested in Dubai. Never. Not one time.
Mm.
So, I mean, it just goes to show you that the doping testing in tennis is, I mean, it's next to nothing. No, they're just not doing it. They're just not.
But Serena just gets tested, like, more than Michael Jackson.
She's getting tested more. But listen, she's really not getting tested that much. If you look at how athletes
yeah.
get tested in other sports, she's not getting tested a lot. She's just getting tested a lot in the terms of tennis. If you look at track and field people, they run a match, they run a race, they're getting tested
yep.
as soon as they're done. You know, you're watching the World Cup right now. You've got people on the sidelines wearing vests that say doping control. You'll never see that in tennis, ever, ever, ever. So, like I said, it's about more what's not happening than what's happening. That and the reason people aren't talking about it is because tennis journalism is lazy. They're just lazy. They don't want to write the
Explain the
good story.
Explain why this lazy. Okay. Interesting. So basically, they don't want to write the good stories. They don't want any controversy. They just want to keep the squeaky clean country club as it could get, I suppose.
Well, they don't want to offend anybody. Tennis is too small. The same people cover the sport every single week. They don't even introduce themselves at press conferences. You know, you watch a basketball presser and they say, "Hi, I'm Janina Reed from ESPN," and then you go on with your question, right? They don't do that in tennis because
right.
it's so small. Everybody knows who everybody is. So anybody that makes waves, they just get pushed out. That's why they don't want to do the hard
That's
work and write the real story. It is.
That's too bad. That goes against what journalism should be all about. It should be about
exactly
the fans, the public, and not just kissing tennis players' asses. So,
and that's how
that's
it goes. It's much more of a friendship than it is a business relationship.
Well, let me just say this. I mean, at least there's one bright side to this is that at least everybody knows that Serena's clean.
Yeah.
So that's one bright side of it. So, and she works very, very
that.
Hard. Obviously, I mean, her training is legendary. So,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so one more thing on the women before we get to the men's side. aside from the Williams sisters, Simona Halep, and maybe some people like Naomi Osaka, excuse me, I'm thinking about the World Cup. Who should we, like, who is the, I don't want to say the dark horse, but who, what female tennis players should we be on the lookout for, or should be on the watch list, if you will,
listen,
going forward?
These bitches are falling like flies. I do not know. I do not have an answer for you. Everybody's losing that is supposed to win, except for right now, except for like Madison Keys, the Williams sisters, Osaka's still in. Halep, she's not going to get far. She's not a grass court player. If all these people keep losing, she might find her way there, but I doubt it. Caroline Wozniacki is out. Everybody's just out.
I know.
I don't know who's going to take
this. How about the third seed is out, too? The third seed is out. I can't pronounce the last name to save my life, but
oh, Garbine
Muguruza?
Yeah, she lost. She lost. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're a hot mess. The women's side is wide open.
It's a hot ass mess. I know you're like, this is a hot ass mess. Well, speaking of not hot ass messes, let's go to the men's side right quick. Where things outside of the third seed dude losing today, everything's still kind of like chalkish, if you will.
I don't know. Like, Dominic Thiem lost. He was 7. He didn't even lose. He fucking retired. Like, you just don't. Take your ass whooping and just take it. David Goffin is out. He was the number 10 seed. I don't know. Like, Marin Cilic lost today. He should not have lost.
Right.
Marin Cilic is the number 3 seed that you speak of. He was the one on Federer's side that could maybe give him some problems should they both get that far. And, I don't know. The men's draw overall is pretty balanced. There's not any section of it that's stacked with really, really good players. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, it really is set up right now in the way the draw looks to have another damn Federer and Nadal final. I don't know who's going to stop them. I don't. If one of them falls, it'll be Nadal. It probably won't be Federer. But Federer's draw just gets easier by the day, and that doesn't usually fare well for him. That usually means he'll fuck up. So, I don't know. I don't know. I don't expect Novak Djokovic to do well, you know, because he's still trying to find his head. We'll see.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him and Eisner. Like, do you give any of those two cats a shot? I mean, I don't know the bracket of the draw Eisner's on.
I don't even know if he's still in. He might have lost.
Actually,
I know he
won in 5 sets.
He did? Are you sure?
Yeah, he won in 5 sets.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll believe
sure
you on that.
Black
but no,
he won today.
he will not do well. He won't. He can make it to the final and he won't win. But he'll never make it that far. He rarely makes it to the second week of a Grand Slam. So he's a serve bot. That's what he does. He tries to get it to a tiebreaker, serves some huge serves, and when he gets up against someone that can actually play tennis, he can't win. So he'll falter. You know why? I'm going to tell you why he's going to falter, because he also is a Trumper and we're doing God's work.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't say anything. I remember when Colin Kaepernick took his stance for the first time and Eisner said some snark on TV. Ever since then, I'm like, fuck that dude. I make it every tournament. It doesn't matter if it's a major or another tournament. When I see his name, I'm like, I don't even say I hope he loses. I just say fuck that dude. I just always say that.
That, you know what? That is a really good way to view him. Really good way. But yeah, I'm not concerned with him. He's
never
not going to do anything. You shouldn't.
Yeah. And I won't. So I haven't heard this one name I hadn't heard from in a while. And one of my favorite names to say in tennis. Gael Monfils. Yeah.
Gael Monfils. He's looking good. A lot of people didn't expect him to. They didn't expect him to win his round one match against his countryman Richard Gasquet, but he did, and he's looking good. Listen, Gal can beat anybody on this tour. He is quite the underachiever, and no one, I promise you, no one would be surprised if he lifted the trophy at the end because he has that kind of talent, but he won't. He'll fuck it up because that's what he does. He showboats too damn much. Too damn much.
Like a discipline,
but I love
I suppose,
him.
Or just doesn't work hard enough, or
I don't know. I think that he just might be complacent. I mean, he lives a good life. He's steadily in the top of the tour. He makes good money. That's enough for some people.
Yeah. So he doesn't have that drive, basically. Like every time I see dudes or whatever, like competitor, with all the talent in the world and just constantly just comes up short, it's almost always pointed to just lack of discipline. You know what I mean? It's like they don't take that crap seriously. They don't work hard enough. To your point, they showboat, but I can't figure that dude out.
I have witnessed with my own eyes Gael Monfils drink Coke during a match. Coke, Coca-Cola.
Wow, are you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
So what does that tell you?
Yeah, he's undisciplined. Quite stupid.
I have been to his practices. I have been to his practices and heard with my own ears his coach tell him, you know what, this isn't going well. No more wine during lunch. He's drinking before he goes to play.
Wow.
But that explains it. So there's Gael Monfils for you.
That explains it. And this
he's French and he's fast.
Yep. And he could put on a dance show too. I think
mm-hmm.
a few years ago, during the rain, he started getting into the dance off with his opponent, which was quite epic. and could probably find on YouTube anywhere. But speaking of French dudes, black French dudes, how about the other dude, Tsonga?
Tsonga is not there.
Well.
Yeah, he's not there.
Okay.
He's injured. He didn't even enter. He hasn't done so well. He's been kind of MIA. He had a baby, and he just kind of faded away. He shows up every once in a while.
Hmm. That's another dude with a lot of talent. Comes up
for sure.
Short every for single
sure.
time. So one last thing, one more thing, or a couple more things. You alluded to earlier. You think this is going to look like Federer and Nadal all over again? I think it has that feel to it right now. Look, I'm a Nadal guy. You know that. I know you're a Federer gal. So you're going to probably talk trash to me and make fun of me whenever Federer beats him again on grass. But I think, something to be said about those two OGs, if you will, like getting down possibly for the title once again. I mean, that has to make for good TV, right? I mean, that's the storyline of
does
two
it?
OGs.
Does
I
it? Because
think
it
so.
Kind
I
of
mean,
it kind of feels like how people were bored with the NBA finals. Like, really, we've got Cleveland again. We've got the Warriors again. Because I mean, that's where this is like 2006. We're going back in time instead of moving forward. I'm fine with it because, you know, I'm a fan. But at the same time, these young kids got to step up. They got to step up. They have to
be
better.
Do you even see that being possible? I mean, you got people like to your point, Eisner.
He's not young,
flames are early. He's been around. I know he's been around. Like Eisner, I guess dudes like Eisner and company just flaming out early. I mean, Djokovic is the only other dude that's won multiple majors, but he's a 12 seed and he seemed like kind of like an afterthought almost. I mean, isn't it possible that he could get his shit together and make a run?
Sure, absolutely.
An upset thing, so to speak?
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely he can. He has the talent. He just has to get used to playing again. I mean, he's been away for a long time. He's been injured.
Right.
He had a surgery. So he's just working his way back in. No one would be surprised if Novak won this tournament because it's Novak Djokovic, you know. But at the same time, if he wins, it's no different because for the last, almost 10 years, we've seen nobody win except for Federer, Nadal, Novak, Murray, Stan Wawrinka. That's it. That's it. Stan's already gone. He lost. He's coming back off of a surgery. Murray lost his he didn't even play. Murray is still recovering from a surgery. He had hip surgery last year. So he hasn't played consistently in 11 months.
Mm-hmm.
He played Wimbledon last year. He left court hardly being able to walk, and he had a major surgery. He played a couple warm-up tournaments, and he lost in round one each time, and he didn't play Wimbledon. So there's nobody left. So even if it's not Federer or Nadal, and it's Novak or
right.
even Delpo, Delpo's the only other man who has snuck out a major in all of this when he beat Federer at the U.S. Open, which seems like a lifetime ago. So I don't know. I don't know who, or Cilic, but he's gone. Cilic has won a couple, won a major, but he's gone too. So
right.
who's it going to be?
Right.
You know, it should be, we should be looking at Alexander Zverev, the young German, or Crazy Nick that, you know, they hate because he's a brown boy. But
what's his
they
name?
Won't.
Nick what now?
Kyrgios. Nick Kyrgios from Australia.
Okay.
But, you know, they, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'm going to get you out here on this, sis. And once again, this is Janina Reed. From,
oh, wait a minute. You don't get to have the girl from Cleveland on and not ask me about LeBron.
Oh, I will. I promise you, I will. But first, I will say this. I'll drop this nigga on you. On this date, in 1975, 43 years ago, Arthur Ashe became the first brother to win Wimbledon. He beat Jimmy Connors. And that was actually an upset. But yeah, July. So 43 years ago to this day, late great Arthur Ashe, became the first brother to win Wimbledon. Okay, so I'll get you out here on Cleveland on what you think of Miss Cleveland girl on LeBron James, as Stephen A. Smith would say, LeBron James leaving Cleveland, your beloved Cavs, for L.A. So what are your thoughts? I kind of saw it coming, to be honest with you,
bro. Fuck LeBron. Listen.
You want to get that in there, didn't you? You want to get that LeBron in there. you sneaky sister.
I'll tell you two things.
Okay.
First thing is, I'm happy that he did not make a fucking spectacle of himself like he did when he left the first time. At least he did it right this time. Go quietly,
not
on TV, looking like a dumbass. Second, when he came back and he wrote this open love letter to Cleveland about how I'm coming home and I always knew I was going to end my career in Cleveland and blah, blah, blah. I remember going, we'll see. And here we are. We'll see. He's leaving. Bye, Blue. And if
what,
LA really thinks I'm... Yes, absolutely. And if anybody in L.A. thinks that there's not some loophole in that contract for him to get out of there when they don't win, you're kidding yourself. He'll leave. That's what he does.
He's going to leave y'all too, boo.
Yep.
So I'll say this, man. I mean, so see, he has – I know his wife – they own two homes out there. His wife allegedly wants to go out there. He's going to put his son in a big-time high school out there where Kenyon Martin's son's going to be at, as well as Scottie Pippen's son, both highly touted 8th and 9th graders. And Bronny, his son, his oldest son, is highly touted as a 13-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's all about Brandon. I wrote on my blog, if he goes to L.A., it's not about winning, it's about Brandon. He wants to
probably
be larger than life. And, you know, he's already been in Hollywood, already been in a train wreck, so...
Yeah.
It is what it is. He's
it
good.
Was a train wreck.
He got three rings. Yep. But, he's got his three rings. He's good. He's good. I mean, he probably
is. He's set for
entire
life.
Laker
do you.
And for all that pantheon of great Lakers, Laker greats, and he probably would never win a title out there again, but He's good.
He's fine. He'll be fine. Cleveland will be fine. Eventually.
You sure about that?
Listen, we know how to lose better than anybody. We have the Browns.
There you go. There you go, the Brownies. Even though I'll say this one more thing about, and I can't believe I'm saying this as a Steelers fan. I think your Brownies are going to surprise some cats this year.
They're
more talented than ever been.
Listen, we will talk. Okay. Something, you go to the Browns, you get hurt, you get caught up in drugs. I mean, it's just like what happens. It's bad karma. So we'll talk in 6 months. I don't know. We've been here before where it looked like there was some talent coming in and something bad just always happens.
All right, sis. I won't wait too long, hopefully, to talk to you about this next time. So,
all right.
Appreciate you, as always.
Thanks for having me. Good night.
Cool. Good night. That's one of my good friends, Janina Reed. Please check out YouTube podcast once a week called Real Tennis Fans. They're freaking hilarious. I mean, it makes me laugh a lot every time I listen to them. So it's good stuff. Now, before we get to the NBA with my man Kevin Clunes from the Weekend Adjustment Show that I sometimes co-host once a month here in Hamilton, Ohio, I'm going to touch on the World Cup right quick. Well, we're in the quarterfinal round, and you know, the usual suspects are there: England, Sweden, France, Uruguay, Brazil, Belgium. Then you have Russia and Croatia. I mean, it's interesting to me, and it's downright exciting because Croatia is very good, but outside of Russia being the host squad, you got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Damn good teams that are left. I mean, they're like top 20, at least probably top 15. So, outside of Russia. So, it's going to be exciting as hell. I mean, you know, Uruguay playing France like tomorrow morning, followed by Brazil and Belgium. That should be fun as hell. I mean, that's going to be high. I think Uruguay's going to try to slow things down against France. And Brazil and Belgium, they both put up some goals. I mean, Belgium scored 3 goals. Again, they were down 2-0 to Japan in the round 16 and scored, like, with 30 minutes left to go in the match. And they ripped off 3 goals in 30 minutes. Belgium is that squad, y'all. Belgium is that damn squad. I like Sweden, and I really like England's story. They're kind of like under the radar, if you can believe that, about the English men's soccer squad. But I'm going to keep my eyes on both games tomorrow, the Uruguay and France matchup, as well as Brazil and Belgium. I just still think France is going to be the one that the countries are going to be hoisting the Gold Cup when it's all said and done. But I'm keeping my eyes out on Brazil and Belgium. That's going to be a hell of a match. That's going to be one hell of a semifinals. The winner of Uruguay and France gets the winner of Brazil and Belgium. It looks like the other side of the bracket with Russia, Croatia, Sweden, and England is going to be a sacrificial lamb to whoever comes out of Brazil, Belgium, France, and Uruguay bracket side. But I don't like Uruguay because I don't like Luis Suarez. He has big buck teeth. He likes to bite people for some reason. And I just hope that France beats the hell out of him. The problem is France has been playing around too much. They don't put teams away like they should. They played around with Argentina too long. They were throwing themselves down 2-1 in the round of 16. Then all of a sudden, that Mbappe cat, that 19, 20-year-old kid, ripped off a hat trick. And before you know it, it was 4-2, and he was doing the damn thing. So that's why I still got France hosting the Gold Cup when it was all said and done. But I wouldn't be shocked if Brazil or Belgium ruins the party. So, again, those are 2 matches to watch for tomorrow. And those matches should be a whole lot of fun. Now on to the last, but not least, my pride and joy, NBA, and particularly free agency. And to help me cover that is one of my guys who I actually do a show with once a month as a fill-in talk show host, the substitute teacher, the glorified substitute teacher, if you will. And I hope I don't butcher his last name, but his name is Kevin Clune from the Weekend Adjustments every Saturday morning on WMOH 1450, The Ticket. Kevin, what's happening, bro?
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Good.
Can
did
you hear
I
me?
Put you your last name? I'm pretty sure I did.
It's no, that's all right. It's McCune. Got that the Irish surname, the MCC.
Oh, McCune. Why did I say Clooney? I'm thinking about, I don't know, in my childhood,
yeah,
my George Clooney, I don't know why.
You know, the Clooneys are from Cincinnati. I wish I was related to them. I'd have a lot more money.
There you go. Probably have a fat crib somewhere and just be hiding
out.
That's right. Yeah, man, cool, man. Well, first of all, thank you for joining me. And also, I know you and I and your co-host, Jarrett, loves ourselves the NBA. So let's get right
yes,
to it, bro.
Wayne Ellington talk, right?
I'm sorry?
Wayne Ellington talk, right?
No, well, that and Brendan Haywood, if you want. But let's get the fat ass elephant out of the room, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
LeBron to L.A. I mean, I saw it coming. I saw this. I've seen this come. I didn't want to believe it, but I saw it. I've been seeing it coming for the past couple of seasons. I always was thinking that, you know, like wherever LeBron went, it was either going to be about winning or his brand. And him going to L.A., in my opinion, it was all about branding with him. I mean, hey, it's nothing wrong if he wants to settle versus laws on 3 rings and going 3-6 in the finals. But I mean, so who am I to judge? But I just think that I was under the assumption that he was chasing that Michael Jordan ghost and wanted to rack up more titles. I just don't see it happening in L.A. anytime soon. That was the Golden State Warriors, or even the Houston Rockets in the West. But let me get your thoughts, Kevin, on this. Did you like the move to L.A. or do you hate the move? Or are you pretty much indifferent?
Yeah, for sure. No, Scott, I'm a big Cavs fan. We've talked about it before.
Yes.
So it was heartbreaking just from a heart standpoint to see him leave Cleveland, to see him leave Ohio. But in all honesty, I'm right there with you. I think this is – if you've read the tea leaves, it's been in the works for a while. I remember last summer, you know, when the whole Paul George trade didn't happen and then come to find out that's because LeBron wasn't committing to the team long term, so they didn't want to put in unprotected draft picks to make that happen. So yeah, I think it's been in the process for a while. As far as just a basketball head move, I understand it. There is part of me as a Cavs fan that's like, man, he left our trash lineup to go to that trash lineup in L.A. And then you look at what they've done. Free agency, they've added a couple quizzical names to this point. But I think I disagree with you a little bit in that I think that if LeBron wants another championship, I think he's positioned in L.A. better than he would have been in Cleveland. Even if he would somehow able to drag this team to another finals next year, which would have been impossible if Boston stayed healthy and Philadelphia stayed healthy, he was going to lose, and his record in the finals was going to go to 3-7, and that was going to hurt his legacy even further. Now, this Lakers team this year is no closer to a championship, in my opinion, than what the Cavs are, but when you look at their long-term flexibility here in the next few years, they are a lot better positioned than Cleveland. You figure next year they're going to have another max salary spot available. Maybe they add Kawhi. And then it'll be interesting to see what they do in the meantime with the rest of this summer and offseason via trade, if they're able to add anybody else. But I don't think that the Lakers roster, as it's currently constructed, is going to be how it's constructed 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And I think LeBron's ultimately probably chasing maybe one or two more championships tops by the time that this Lakers team is going to be ready to compete. But I also agree with you. Mm-hmm. It's a better lifestyle move too, because he's got his production company. He's got Blaze Pizza. They've got the house there. You were talking about the school that Bronny's going to there in your last segment, and he's going to have better AAU opportunities in LA than he would have had in Cleveland. So I think ultimately LA was a perfect wedding together for LeBron in terms of a lifestyle choice as well as a potential basketball choice in the future. I do hate it, though.
Right. Well, I know. I feel you on that. I totally see. Especially your family of balanced basketball. Man, I said this. I mean, you know, it's so weird. You know, with LeBron going west. Well, first of all, I'm impressed that he would go west. Because, I mean, people will argue, i.e. Skip Bayless, that he would want to take the easy way out, so to speak, in the east to get his ass back to the finals. But so he was going through meat grinders every other night in the West. I will give him his props for that. But speaking of Mississippi going out West, outside of maybe two teams in the Eastern Conference, why the hell would anyone care about the East?
I mean, why would anyone care about the East
at this point?
I'm probably in total opposition to most basketball fans and most basketball people when it comes to this, but I think when you look at the Western Conference, right now it's definitely top-heavy, and it's going to be a grind. He's not getting to the finals this year. He's not getting to the Western Conference finals this year in all likelihood. But when you look at, I think, long-term, down the road, the next 2-3 years for each conference, I think the Celtics, with what they've built, and Philadelphia with what they've built, they've got long-term stability with those two teams.
Yes, they're
going to be dominating the Eastern Conference for a long time. Whereas in the West, I mean, Chris Paul's already long in the tooth. You know, he's due to get injured almost every postseason, it seems. And when you look at that conference, I feel like it's really top-heavy between Houston and Golden State. And Golden State's going to be there for sure. Now, you got free agency next year where Klay Thompson's due to get paid, and maybe he'll move or something. DeMarcus Cousins probably definitely going to move. I'm sure we'll touch on that. But ultimately, though, when you look at the Western Conference as a whole, and this is something I've talked about on Week in Adjustments, if you look at just those, you know, once you get to that third team, that third through eight team, there's really a lot of parity. And so I think there might be more opportunity here in the next few years to really gain a foothold on the Western Conference than the Eastern Conference, just when you look at the ages of the rosters that are competing at the top. And that's just my personal opinion.
Sure. And you know, I feel that. I mean, what Boston and now Philly has built, thanks to process in Philly, I mean, it's good to see that rivalry again. You know, I mean, I'm going to be 45 years old in September. And I remember those Philadelphia-Boston grudge matches in the 80s, you know, with Dr. J, Larry Bird, Most Malone.
I just remember, now I wasn't alive then, but Celtics fans chanting beat L.A. when the Sixers had pretty much taken control, and I think it was like a game seven or something, where the Sixers were going to go on to play the Lakers in the finals, and Boston fans were chanting beat L.A. So, yeah, you're right, there were some pretty epic
classic
rivalries there.
Yeah, I mean, and to see them duke it out in this past year's playoffs, it was good to see that again. That intensity was there, and you could tell those two teams, barring catastrophic injuries or a meteor falling on the franchises, they're going to be competing for the East for the years to come. And you know, I don't count Toronto. I don't count those guys at all. It's going to be Boston, Philly, maybe Indiana, and a bunch of other teams. So. It's going to be interesting, but I'm going to shift gears right back to LeBron's new L.A. team. You touched on the personnel moves. Lance Stephenson? Really? I mean, is this like another Kobe and Matt Barnes pairing? You know, remember those two had quite the history before they teamed up with each other and won a title together and maybe other odd pairs like Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman, before, you know, Scottie Pippen as well. I mean, that was an odd match, but they won three titles after they signed Dennis Rodman back in the day. Do you see this? I mean, this is going to be an interesting chemistry experiment between he, Lance, and Rajon Rondo, which I understand why they got Rondo to challenge Lonzo Ball to be in the point guard that he's supposed to be, because Rajon, even though he can't shoot with a damn, he's a damn good point guard, and he ratchets his play up in the postseason. That's proven. That's why I call him playoff Rondo. So give me your thoughts on the chemistry experiment that's going to be the Los Angeles, the 2018 and 2019 Los Angeles Lakers, starting with Lance Stephenson or, you know, wherever you want to go with that after Lance Stephenson. That's what I want to get.
No, for sure, for sure. I'll give you my initial thoughts, and then I'll – you know, kind of add in what I think LeBron and Magic and the Lakers would have all of us believe. I'm not sure that I necessarily do. But I think my initial thoughts when they first brought in Lance Stephenson and then proceeded to bring in JaVale McGee and Rajon Rondo. Initially I just thought, okay, well, I remember when the Cavs brought on J.R. Smith, and I wasn't as upset as some Cavs fans were to add him to the roster, because you know, every dynasty has kind of had that bad boy, that guy that'll nonchalantly backhand another player in the face and act like he didn't do it. But so I thought when they added Lance Stevenson, I'm like, okay, they're adding, you know, they're adding a dog that's going to bark at Draymond Green. And then they add McGee and they add Rondo. And now I'm like, all right, now they're just adding, you know, henchmen. When Draymond wants to bark at LeBron, he's got three guys coming back at him. That was my initial thought. You know, they're just adding to the toughness of the team as well as veteran leadership. But what Magic and LeBron, if you read reports today, would have us believe, it's that the Lakers are trying to construct a roster that is very, very different from what LeBron had in Cleveland, and they're doing a great job of that. I'll give them that. But if you remember LeBron in Cleveland, he was a driving kick offense. He was surrounded by 3-point shooters like Channing Frye. They brought in Richard Jefferson, Kyle Korver, all those guys. And now you look at the Lakers, and you look up and down this roster, and it's like, maybe Brandon Ingram's the best 3-point shooter on this team, and I think he shot like somewhere in the mid-30s last year from 3-point land. So there's not a lot of shooters, but what's coming out today, what LeBron's thinking is that he's getting older, and he doesn't necessarily want to be the guy that's going to have to create for himself all the time and just be dishing to, you know, a stationary Kyle Korver in the corner. He wants guys that can play on the ball and be playmakers themselves, create their own shot, create havoc, and then he wants to kind of post up a little bit more, kind of like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant did in the latter years of their careers, where they became more post-up players as opposed to just physically driving to the basket so much. So that is, I think, what the Lakers want us to believe is their thinking, is that Rondo, Stevenson, these are guys that are going to be able to create their own shot, guys that are going to be able to dish it to LeBron in transition, guys that aren't just going to stand around and wait for plays to come to them. They are going to initiate plays. So I think that's the thinking. I don't know. I think it's probably somewhere a blend of the two between what I think they were going for and what the Lakers say they're going for.
To mention, though, it's going to be quite the – I mean, JaVale McGee. I mean, he and Lance Stevenson on the same team, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's laugh
Jack
out
in
loud
a pool with a center in the Lakers uniform. I mean, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah. And speaking of the Lakers, sort of, how about Paul George spurning the Lakers, his hometown Lakers, to re-sign with OKC? What was that all about?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, Scott. I thought that I knew LeBron was going to L.A. I think most people kind of knew he was going to L.A. It was one of the worst-kept secrets, I think, for basketball fans, if you just followed all the rumors. But I think I was one of the people that fell for the trap that Paul George, LeBron, and Kawhi had been working this out for some time amongst the three of them.
Yeah,
definitely not the case just like minutes into free agency, like at 12:01 a.m. last Thursday when free agency opened. But I'll say this, if you looked at, anything online, Paul George has had some common sense where he said, if we put a dent in Golden State while I'm at OKC with me and Russ, I'm going to get credit for that. If I were to go to the Lakers and we were to put a dent into Golden State, into the Warriors, then LeBron's going to get all the credit for that. Now, I can appreciate that to a point, and I can believe that to a point, but I also think he had 40-some-odd million reasons to also stay in OKC.
You know what, though? OKC, I mean, they have an off – what's different from the last season, this season, is that they actually have a full off season to work out the kinks, right? Because they went through a whole season. I mean, they were literally doing it on the fly last season. Before it decided, okay, this is Russ's show. Paul George, you get yours here and there. Camille, you can just collect your money and play scenery. So this season coming up, I mean, they actually know each other's games now.
Yeah.
So now you have like a very motivated, uberly motivated Westbrook and a similarly motivated Paul George. On paper, OKC is scary. They are scary. They still have Steven Adams in the middle. And, if Roberson comes back, I know he's an offensive liability, but he's one of the best defenders in the league. So if he comes back,
he really is.
I mean, this team is loaded, man. I mean, it's really low-key loaded. I mean, they could really challenge the top teams in the league. I mean, because I remember Jared and I like before the playoffs this past season, we had OKC and Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. We thought they were better. That OKC was better than Houston on paper, but of course they didn't get the chance because they lost to a team whose best player was a rookie in Utah. So
yes.
That's why I was shocked that Paul George went back to OKC.
I think what OKC needs to capture in order to be successful this year is kind of that spirit that we saw from the Jazz in the playoffs. The Jazz just had something about them. There's very much a team mentality, and I think that starts with that party that Russell Westbrook threw that Paul George came to, and I think that there's just going to be a bond this year between those two that we necessarily didn't see last year because I don't think Paul George knew at that time where he was headed. But I think now that he's committed to an odd contract, mind you, the 4 years, everyone thought he'd sign for two and get that, you know, supermax for 10 years in the league, 10 year service in the league, but commits to OKC for four, kind of does the Thunder a favor. I think we're going to see their chemistry increase. And I think how much does it say that Carmelo Anthony was not at that Russell Westbrook party? That guy's getting bought out, I think, pretty soon. I don't think they're going to be able to find a trade partner, but I do ultimately think Anthony gets bought out. I don't think he plays for OKC next year. And I think the chemistry between Paul George and Russ is something that the team can build off of, especially when you get rid of, not to be hard on the guy, but, you know, essentially a cancer at this point in his career in Carmelo Anthony.
You know what? It's to be said about talking about Paul George and Westbrook. There was reports that people were saying that they were tight off the court as well as on the court. And they really tried to make things work between the two of them as far as success, on-court success, but they're tight off the court. And you saw it at that party that Westbrook threw because for him to throw that party, you know, he obviously knew ahead of time that Paul George would be resigning with and becoming his backcourt mate, if you will. So, So I think OKC is going to be a team to watch. And speaking of Anthony, Carmelo, when he gets bought out, you see him joining LeBron in L.A. He has a house out there. And
you
their boys.
I'm pretty sure that the Lakers still have – now, when they dropped Julius Randle and they signed Rondo, they only signed Rondo to 1 year, $9 million. So I think they still have some small amount of cap space to work with to bring in another veteran. I could definitely see Carmelo going to LA just to buddy up with LeBron for a year. I think it would only be on a 1 year deal. And then they'd have to wait till next year. And, you know, with all the super free agents coming out next year, see what would happen. But I could definitely see a 1 year kind of almost at a veteran minimum, especially after a buyout from OKC, Anthony joining up with LeBron. I don't think a lot of other places make sense for him. The Lakers need shooters, whether or not they say they do, they still need to add a shooter. And if Carmelo Anthony can do anything at this point in his career, he can still shoot.
Yep, that is true. He still can get buckets. He still has an outside daily outside shot. But Carmelo Anthony, it's interesting how quickly things could turn in terms of fortunes. I mean, he was one of the deadliest scorers in the league a few years ago. And it just went downhill, man.
it did. He needs to wear the hoodie a little bit more.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I just said he needs to wear the hoodie a little bit more. Get back out training. Hoodie Mello.
Hoodie Mello, there you go. We're on the court. I'm sure he'll work out something with Adam Silver. we mentioned him earlier, but Boogie Cousins of Golden State. There were reports that he said that he had no other offers on the table, but it's come out recently that New Orleans offered him 2 years for $20 million, $10 million per. And I guess he being a cousin thought that he was worth more than that, which is okay. But he wasn't getting any more offers to the point where as soon as free agency started, he called Golden State early in the morning. The day one of free agency, he signed a mid-level exception. So, first of all, I mean, I think it's odd that a dude who averages 25 over 10 and maybe 5 only signs for the mid-level exception for 1 year. I know he's coming off of an injury, one of the worst injuries in basketball, let alone especially those who are big men, because it takes away their lift, right? But he has so many – Boogie Cousins has so many skills. He doesn't have to play above the rim. He can take you out on the perimeter when he's like when he's healthy. He'll still get you buckets. He can shoot the three. He can take you down low. So uberly talented. And he's going from potential supermax player in Sacramento to a dude playing for the mid-level exception. He's not even 30 years old. So, I mean, first of all, like, is this, I mean, I guess, is this Boogie Cousins, like, realizing that he's this close to pissing away a promising career and a big-time contract because of his attitude? I mean, I don't know, but to see him just jump ship to Golden State so quickly, makes me think he was scared he wasn't going to get a deal at all or just desperate.
Yeah, it really was interesting. I mean, this is a guy, it doesn't take a long YouTube search to see all the times that he's cussed out the Warriors and cussed out players on the Warriors.
Right.
So to see him go there, like you said, it was definitely a shock. I was shocked. I thought the Lakers were targeting him when they renounced Julius Randle and the Pelicans picked up Randle. It looked like it made sense on either a one-year $17 million deal, which is what they had, or if they were able to stretch Luol Deng, then they could have given Cousins 1 year $22 million. But I guess if we are to believe the reports that have come out, the Lakers got scared of the injury and didn't even make an offer. And if that is true, I think you have to give credit where it's due that the Warriors were willing to come out and convince him to sign for the mid-level exception. But I think, you know, everything that I believe as far as this situation goes is, I think, Scott, you said a lot of it. And that's the Boogie, wherever he's been, I think being a little too drastic, because I feel like in New Orleans, he was pretty much a model citizen and him and AD got along really well. But before his time in New Orleans, this was a guy that was thought of as a locker room cancer, et cetera, et cetera. And I think with him coming off that torn ACL, being 6'11", being, you know, nearly 300 pounds, like you said, being a bigger guy, I think teams were just scared because I think so many teams that could have signed him, they would have been wrapping up money in months like, you know, January when he's supposed to come back, but maybe he doesn't make it back by then. So then February, March, and then, but I feel like with the Warriors, they don't necessarily have to worry about that. They know they're getting to the playoffs. They know they're either going to be the one seed or the two seed in the West. Yeah. So as long as DeMarcus Cousins is at like 75%, you know, by the time May rolls around, that's a really good signing for them. Because 75% DeMarcus Cousins is head and shoulders above anything they had starting for them at center last year. And I think from Cousins' perspective, going to a team like Golden State that has a culture like winning, like they have, it's a place for him to rehab his image. And if he's rehabbing the image from the bench for 8 months in, you know, throughout the season, so be it. He still can be a locker room piece. And then when he's able to come and contribute come playoff time, then he can prove to people that he's got his legs under him and he can still play basketball at a rate that's deserving of a max contract. And then, you know, he'll get paid and move on in 2019, unless they want to move on from Klay Thompson and keep Boogie. We'll see. Who knows?
You know, and that's the thing. I'm glad you said it, because this could potentially parlay into a long-term gig with Golden State. How wide that would be, because to your point, outside of Draymond Green, who he's real close with, he was cussing. Mm-hmm. He would cuss out the other Warriors at will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if Klay doesn't come back next year, I mean, granted, he's worth more than he's worth a lot of money. And maybe Draymond after that. I mean, Boogie could factor in long term if he plays his cards right with Golden State.
Yeah,
it depends.
He
how
really
he
could.
Does,
I mean,
falls out.
As great as that Warriors team is, with Thompson coming up, I think, at next year, and then I think Draymond in 2020, the year after that, I think really the only two guys that are necessarily untouchable in the Warriors lineup are Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. I think that they're going to have their cap when it comes to retaining Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, because as good as those guys are, they're just more replaceable than Curry and Durant. And so you're right. If those guys get bigger paydays that the Warriors don't want to match, you know, maybe Boogie picks up some of that money that would have been devoted to them.
Yep, exactly. So it's, I mean, out of the way, Boogie needs to be, I mean, he really needs to take some serious. Not saying he won't, but again, he's sitting down the opportunity to play long term of a squad and win, potentially win titles with a squad who he's taking time to trash than previous years. So it's interesting as hell to see. One more thing, brother, I'll get you out on this.
Okay.
And I got to bring this up. Kawhi Leonard. The ever so long saga of Kawhi Leonard with his twists and turns. His uncle, who is his business manager, saying some things about the organization, so San Antonio Spurs organization, all that stuff where he would be traded, where he'd be the Lakers, where he'd play with LeBron. I mean, would he go to Boston or Philly? Point blank, if someone put your healthy feet to the fire, where do you think Kawhi Leonard ends up and why?
I think he ultimately ends up with the Lakers. And here's why. I think that the Spurs, as long as this thing drags out, I think that the Spurs are losing leverage. You look at Danny Ainge in the situation in Boston, the Celtics are kind of, at this point, just blatantly refusing to add Tatum or Jaylen Brown to any deal for Kawhi Leonard. And I don't think that the Spurs are interested. I don't think the Spurs are interested in taking on Kyrie Irving for a year and then having him go to the Knicks. And, you know, essentially you're in the same situation you were with Kawhi. And then when you look at the Philadelphia Sixers, one thing that I think has kind of been funny in this situation is just, again, reported today that they're really dragging their feet at throwing Markel Fultz into the deal. I mean, I think Ben Simmons is proven he's a point guard for that offense. I'd go ahead and do it if it meant landing Kawhi Leonard.
Wait a minute, they want to hang on to Markel Fultz?
Yes,
really?
There's ton of rumors out.
Why?
Ton of rumors out today. If you get online and look, like at hoopshype.com and some various websites, the Sixers at this point are continuing to refuse to put Markel Fultz into the deal. I don't understand
it. Oh, that's so stupid. That's stupid.
Because I don't know if that's necessarily the clincher as far as being able to obtain Kawhi, but to this point, they're still refusing to put him in the deal. And then I think they've been somewhat reluctant on Dario Saric. I think they're a little bit more willing on him than Fultz, which, again, makes no sense to me because I think Saric is the perfect power forward to play next to Embiid. I think the Sixers, they're in the same spot as Boston. They don't want to give up a young asset and then Kawhi leave them for the bright lights of L.A. and, you know, the partnership with LeBron next year, which, you know, it's a gamble until you get a verbal commitment from Kawhi. And apparently Kawhi's not talking to anybody. His uncle's doing all the talking.
Right.
At this point, even though we constantly hear in the media that, oh, if I was the Spurs, I'd hold on to them. The Spurs hold all the cards. I think as this thing drags and further on, they don't. I feel like they lose leverage with each passing day. And I think if you're the Lakers, heck, you might as well be inclined at this point to hang on to Brandon Ingram and Kuzma and Hart and Ball and, you know, see who works with LeBron this year. Maybe you lose in the first round of the playoffs or whatever, but at least you can see who fits in. And then next year when you need to move guys around, they'll already have one match slot available to add Kawhi, but if they want to move more money around, they'll know who fits in with LeBron after a year. So right now the Spurs are essentially telling the Lakers, go ahead and take a year with all your young guys, evaluate who looks good next to LeBron, and then you get Kawhi next year and you don't have to give us anything. So again, like I said, I think the Spurs are losing leverage with each passing day, and I think before the season starts, we'll ultimately see Kawhi end up in a Lakers uniform, because I just don't understand how the Spurs can be satisfied with what might be nothing in return for one of the best players in the world.
You know what? I'd send a share of brain with you. To me, San Antonio lost their leverage the day LeBron James signed with the Lakers. That's when they lost a lot of leverage.
I think you're exactly right.
Because,
sure.
I mean, because remember before then, people were before saying LA was desperate to land a star with all this free cap space and free agency, blah, blah, blah. San Antonio's like, okay, you want our guy, you got your squad and all your great young assets. But then LeBron James signed the dotted line with Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a lot of people tend to want to play with LeBron. And, you know, LeBron being in LA automatically assures them of being a playoff contender. If not, you know, work their way up maybe to a fifth or fourth seed, and they'll start to matter again. The Lakers start to matter again. That just takes away. That really chopped off the Spurs at their knees, because at that point, it's like the Lakers got what they wanted, and LeBron, it is a matter of time. We know a player's going to want to come play with them. It's not a matter of if, but a matter of when. So, of course, Magic is doing the smart thing, and Rob Pelinka doing the smart thing, and sitting back and say, okay, Okay, San Antonio, mm-hmm. still want to play hardball with us? We got LeBron. And don't you think that Kawhi really wants to play with another superstar and win mm-hmm. titles with his hometown team? We got mm-hmm. got our guy. So if you want to hang on to your guy and lose it next year for nothing, be my freaking guest. And
right.
that's the smart play. That's the smart play. Magic Johnson didn't get rich and become a great businessman by being stupid. I mean, mm-hmm. he knows what time it is. So
no, you're exactly
my
right.
thing is, I think that Philly, if those reports are true that they don't want to include Markel Fultz or admit that they made the wrong pick at number one, that's just stupid. I mean, to me,
yeah.
Kawhi
yeah.
would be a great fit alongside
yep.
Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Really? That would be
mm-hmm.
crazy stupid as far as great. Great stupid.
Right.
Because it's 2 degrees of stupid. The bad stupid is what the Sixers offer and wanted to hold on to Markel Fultz, if that those reports are true. But the other side of stupid, the great stupid is the talent level. Once Kawhi, if they were to obtain him, plus the head coach, remember, Brett Brown
mm-hmm.
being San Antonio assistant. So he knows
mm-hmm.
Kawhi very well. So it, to me,
yeah, and you,
it comes down to either L.A. or Philly. I don't think Boston's going to give up in any of their assets because they know that – Danny Ainge has to know that Kawhi really doesn't want to be in Boston. And
right.
and that's a smart play. So I think if Philly, if those reports just need to get their crap together, send Markel Fultz packing, just admit that they made a mistake at number one, and just bring in Kawhi, even if it's 4 years, because they don't have to give up so much in that scenario.
Right, and if Philly, I mean, if they end up being willing to part with Fultz, and if that ends up being the kicker that lands them Leonard, I mean, you always have that Paul George factor. With if he gets to Philadelphia and likes playing with
That's
Embiid
right.
and Simmons for a year, if they
That's
get to
right.
a finals, if, you know, if they're able to make some noise against Golden State or whoever they would face in the finals, maybe you convince him to stay long term. And at the most, you're losing Markel Fultz, who looks like a potential bust at this point anyway. So I agree.
Right.
I don't understand they're dragging their feet unless they just know. Unless they, I will say this. I think that Kawhi did. Philadelphia's team doctor is the doctor that treated Kawhi. And so the funny
right.
thing is that the Sixers medical staff actually probably has more intel on Kawhi Leonard right now than the San Antonio Spurs medical staff. But I don't know if that far be it from me to think that the medical staff has any inside intel, but if they're getting anything from them saying, look, this guy's not coming long term and that's why they're dragging their feet on. I honestly don't have any other reason to believe that, you know, why they wouldn't just throw Fultz into a package to get a player like him. But.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see about that, man. It's going to be lots of good things to look at free agency and everything. So that's what makes the NBA so fun. That's why we love the NBA. Hey, Kevin, thanks a lot, bro. I really appreciate you picking me up on this. Let's talk again soon,
oh,
bro.
Oh, for sure. Oh, we'll do.
All right. Take care. Peace out. Yeah, man. So basically, please check out Kevin McClune, I messed up his name again, and Jared Singleton on the Weekend Adjustments every Saturday morning, WMOH, 1450 The Ticket, as well as my friend Janina Reed on YouTube podcast, Real Tennis Fans. I love that I love this podcast tonight. I had a lot of fun. I hope you all did too. And please check me out on iTunes as well. This podcast on iTunes. And check me on Twitter at ScottyB_73 on Twitter. I think this is my Twitter handle. Let's make sure I get the right one. I don't know. I don't know my own Twitter handle. No. Give it to my Twitter handle. ScottyB_1906. There you go. So anyway, I'm tired, y'all. Please forgive me. But thank y'all for tuning in to the Clown Time. This is Clown Hour. This is Scott Brooks signing off. 06. Peace out and good night.